Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast. We're your favorite THW contributors to discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every weekday, Monday through Friday. Listen daily on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Kyle Knopp, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Zator. Matt, how are you doing today, buddy?
Doing good. Playoffs are, well, the closest Stanley Cup final, so we're getting there. And some of them are almost over, which is kind of, I won't give too much away because we have their good one, good one, bad. So I'm good. I mean, the thing is the only thing I'm still dealing with the allergies, and it's been raining and so trying to keep motivation up, and it's hard when it's dark outside.
especially in this time period when it's kind of that influx right between spring and summer, and it's, is it going to be nice finally? Is it still going to be rainy and kind of crummy? And and it's, you know, the temperatures dip and the allergies come out. So I hope you're feeling better there soon. But yeah, you brought up a good point. We're getting close to the Stanley Cup final. I mean, both of these series could be wrapped up by the end of this week. So that's pretty exciting. But let's jump right into it. And as you mentioned, we'll kick off our one good, one bad. And, you know, you sound pretty excited to talk about it. So let's start with you, Matt. What's your one good and one bad from the week?
Well, I mentioned a little bit what the bad is that, you know, the Colorado-Edmonton series has kind of been disappointing. You know, we kind of hyped it as being, you know, this really great back and forth fast series. And, you know, and it's been all Avalanche. I mean, you know, and the Oilers haven't looked particularly good in any of the games. They had maybe some sparks like in the first period of last game, but you know, the Avalanche have been clearly the better team, and it looks like they're going to be swept. I mean, the odds are, I mean, what, four times in the last the whole NHL history, only four times it's been done, coming back from 03. So it's probably not going to happen. I mean, you never know, I guess, but you know, the Avalanche just seems so much faster, so much better. Maybe not faster, but they seem to be more structured as a team. So it's a my bad is that the, you know, the series isn't going to go long. I mean, we thought it was going to be game seven. You know, I thought it was going to go to at least six or seven. I think we talked about that. And it doesn't look like that's what's going to happen. At least so I'll go to my good. At least the Lightning Rangers one looks like it could potentially be good. I will talk more about that late next, but so that's my good, is that it looks like we may get a longer series. I mean, we'll see, but there's good, bad between the two series.
Absolutely. We did hype that Colorado Edmonton series, and everyone did think it was going to be a lot closer than it was, but you know, here we are, and Colorado's in a commanding lead right now. So excuse me. My good for this week is that Carey Price is preparing to play next season, as though he'll be returning to the Canadiens. And I think that's extremely good. He just won the Bill Masterson Trophy on Friday, you know, coming back to or given to the player that best exemplifies perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. And, you know, he missed 6 months going through a surgery last year, and then went into the player assistance program for substance abuse. So, I mean, he had quite the season last season and away from the rink. So that's very exciting to hear that he is preparing to play for the Canadiens next year, as long as they bring him back. So that's my good. My bad, it's going to be the Edmonton Oilers Colorado Avalanche series going into game four tonight without Nazem Kadri or Evander Kane. You know, Kane hit Kadri from behind and injured him. Kadri is not likely to return this series, and Kane is going to serve a one game suspension. So these are two character guys that have really brought the grit and really brought, you know, that extra level to their teams throughout this whole playoffs. And Kane is, you know, we're going to be talking about it here in a second, but Kane is the leading scorer for the Edmonton Oilers. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they can do since they haven't really been able to produce much offense. So it's just going to take away a little bit from that game, having two of your most energy guys out of the rink. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. All right, moving on. Friday night saw the New York Rangers become the first team to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in back-to-back games since the 2019 playoffs. Tampa Bay did come back to win game 3-2 last night, though, thanks to a late third period goal by Andre Palat. But that just kind of got me thinking over the weekend. Did the Rangers wake the beast with that game 2 victory, the first of the back-to-back defeats against the Tampa Bay Lightning, or did they prove that they are for real? And Matt, you know, I want to get your thoughts on this. Do the Rangers have something to be concerned about right now? Did they wake up the 2-time Stanley Cup champion, or was last night just kind of a fluke, a game that got away from them?
Well, I mean, judging by games 1 and 2, it looked like the Rangers was a much faster team. Lightning looked slow. Their defensive game wasn't that good. But then game 3 at home, and we know Rangers have kind of looked not as good on the road. Against Carolina, they weren't that good. But, I mean, you can't open the door a crack for this team. The Lightning just has shown time and time again they can come back in series. They were down against the Maple Leafs going into game 6, forced to game 7, and then won the 2 straight there. So it's like, they've done it in the past. They've been down in series most of the time in the playoffs when they've won cups, right? So they've lost game 1 in like a lot of their series. So it's not like they're not unfamiliar with this. So, I mean, you don't open, and I think they did. I think the Rangers have kind of threatened, you know, like I say, wake up the beast. I think they definitely have. We'll see what happens in game 4, but you know, it's, I don't know, if you have a 2-0 lead, I don't think you should let this team back. I mean, they just have so many guys that can step up. And they've been here before. They probably didn't panic when they're down 2-0. They're like, you know, we've done this. So we're fine. So, I mean, we'll see. Like I say, we'll see what happens next. But I don't know. I wouldn't, if I was the Rangers, I'd be like, well, we got to get up 3-0. We can't let this team back in. And I don't know. The Lightning have shown in the past that they're resilient. They know what has to happen to win. So we'll see.
Absolutely. This Lightning team is resilient, and they've proven it in numerous playoff series, not just necessarily this year, but in the past 3 years. You know, they've shown that they can come back. I mean, this is the first time they've ever lost back-to-back games in the playoffs in the last 3 seasons. So that's very impressive. And I think you're absolutely right. I think you can't give this team any type of inch, because they will take a mile. And they're good. They can strike at any time. And especially when you give them power play opportunities. I believe they were 2-for-6 on the power play last night, but if you give them 6 power play opportunities, they're going to burn you. I mean, they're just too good 5-on-5, and then if you give them more space out there to work, you know, they have Kucherov, they have Stamkos, they have Hedman that can shoot, you know, Palat in front, Killorn in front, and then you don't even, they're without their best bumper player in Braden Point right now. So, I mean, they're just so deep and so talented that you're absolutely right. They cannot be given any type of inch. So I want to ask, you know, do the Rangers, do they need to win this game 4? Do you think this is a type of desperation win on the road, go back home up 3-1 with a chance to wrap it up at home, and then knowing that even if you do lose at home, you still are in that position to go back to Tampa up in the series, as opposed to going back to Tampa tied? So do you see this game 4 as a must win for the New York Rangers?
I think it is. I mean, the thing is, you go back 2-2, and now the Lightning are like, hey, we're back in this. And like, you know what, like I said with the Maple Leafs, they came back and tied the series and then won game 7. So, it, you know, it comes back to being a 2-2 series, best of three, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd be going for the Lightning now after that. If they would tie the series, you know, have momentum. I mean, I know the Rangers play so well at home and their home crowd really drives them, but, and they would have home ice if it did go to a game seven, although the Lightning also didn't have home ice when they won game seven against the Maple Leafs. So right? It's not always a clear cut that if you have home ice, you'll win. It's tough. I wouldn't let them. I would not want to go back to New York tied 2-2 because it's a whole new series. And like you said, some of those veterans, they know what it takes and they'll step up. And you let them get back on that role that they were, you know, anything can happen. So we will see, but I think definitely the Rangers definitely need to try their hardest to win this next game.
I think you just mentioned a point that I want to drive home because I think it is extremely important. But you mentioned that experience that the Lightning have. Most of this team has been around the last 2 years for these playoff runs. You know, only Nick Paul, Brandon Hagel, Corey Perry, and that might be it. Are the only really only guys you know, that haven't been around for the last two runs and Brian Elliott as the backup goalie, but so they have this experience, whereas the Rangers don't. They don't have anyone with this type of playoff experience except Barclay Goodrow, who got it with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So,
yeah,
the experience definitely favors the Lightning. And if they can get this back 2-2 going back to Madison Square Garden, you know, they proved, like you said, against the Tampa Bay Lightning or against the Toronto Maple Leafs and against the Florida Panthers, that they're able to go into a hostile environment and a loud environment as such of like a game seven and be able to win on the road. So I think you're absolutely right. If this becomes a 2-2 series and we get down to a best of three, even though the Rangers have home ice advantage, you know, I'm going to have to give the, benefit to the Lightning and give them the edge there in that series.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, like I say, the Lightning are just such a veteran team. And they've won two cups. They know what it takes. You don't give them any more chances to kind of solidify that in their mind. They're like, okay, we can do this. And you just don't give them a chance.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And before we move on, I do want to just touch on that goal by Palat last night with 40 seconds and just how creative of a play in the offensive zone that was by Kucherov to not only take that Hedman pass in the slot when his back was to the net and not just like turn and throw a desperation shot, but to cool, calm, and collectively just find Palat with a backhand pass as he's streaking to the net on the short side. And I mean, it was just, it's one of those things that like, you know, I coach girls hockey, coach AAA girls hockey. And I try to tell my girls, like, be creative in the offensive zone, be creative in the offensive zone. And a lot of them are like, well, what do you mean by that? And what I mean by that is that type of play right there is, you know, you're looking to make a play, even though you're not in a position to, shoot the puck right away or in what would be called a dangerous position because your back is to the play. But you know, he got that pass, had his head up. He found Palat streaking and, you know, it was a bang, bang play that Shesterkin and the defense weren't ready for. And who knows, that could be the difference moving forward in this series. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit. Do you have anything else to add about this game three last night?
No, I think that's pretty much covered what the biggest thing is that the Rangers can't let this be the start of something because definitely the Lightning can do it.
100%. I agree. All right. Moving back out west, Edmonton is on the brink of elimination and will be without their top goal scorer for game four. Evander Kane, just a little primer. We just talked about a little bit, was suspended for one game for his hit on Nazem Kadri, but in 15 games this season, Evander Kane has 13 goals in this playoff season, I should say, 4 assists for 17 points. He's a +2, has those 37 PIMs we talked about. Most of those came from that major in misconduct. He's got 2 power play goals, 3 power play points, and 2 game-winning goals. He's shooting at a 22.8% clip, which is well above his career average and what he was shooting this season. But I want to get your thoughts, Matt. who should the Oilers use to insert in place of Kane on that top line, you know, as to someone to fill in for that top scoring? And how will his absence affect the team in this game four?
Well, I mean, like I say, Kane is, like we, you mentioned off the top there with Kane, he's one of the best, like he is the top goal scorer in the playoffs right now. And that's a huge loss. I mean, he also brings that physicality, and yeah, the physicality got him in trouble last game. And I found it, you know what, he had that hit and then he goes and does a borderline behind the, you know, hit from behind this next shift after the 5 minute major. And I'm like, didn't you just learn your lesson, man? Like you just took out a guy and got, and now you're getting suspended. And then you almost do it again. Like, I know you want to be physical. Like I get it, but you can be clean when you're physical. You don't have to hit from behind. You don't have to. And I've never understood that about not just Kane, but some of these other guys, like you can hit clean. And I don't understand why you have to. You see the numbers, and you know how like you coach young kids, right? And you always tell them, that's why they have that stop sign in the back. Don't hit a person from behind. But I mean, it happens, I guess. So, but back to the question. You know, it's going to be tough to replace them. And you know, going up on the top line, I mean, they've been using Draisaitl and McDavid together at times in this series, and it hasn't really worked out. So I mean, if you go that Draisaitl McDavid top duo, you can put up, I don't know, like the thing is, it's hard. I would put Hyman there because he can play that physical game. He can play a similar style to Kane. He gets in on the forecheck, he's quick. You know, he can pot the goal, he can get into the right positions to score with those two. I think that's the guy you bring up there because, I mean, other guys haven't really done too much, and he's played there before. He kind of knows how to play with those two. And in a do or die game, I would put a guy that's, you know, can produce with them. As for bringing who you bring into the lineup, I don't know. And they've talked about Dylan Holloway being a guy that should come in over like guy like Brad Malone. I mean, they're going to have to bring in another guy now.
Yeah, and I believe Yamamoto's still out too, isn't
Yamamoto's it? Out too, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you need some kind of speed and youth. And I don't know, I know it's difficult to bring in a guy on, you know, rookie playing his first playoff game in an elimination game, but those are the guys that can sometimes surprise and be the hero. So, I mean, what do you have to lose, really? I mean, you're not going to screw up his development by having him in a game like this. I mean, you're not playing him 20 minutes. So, I don't know. I another guy's gonna have to be elevated up the lineup too, you know, up from, because Kane plays so much and he plays a lot in the power play and, you know, 5-on-5. So I mean, other guy's gonna have to take those minutes. So I don't know. Holloway could also fit in on the power play, second unit power play. He's a bit of more of an offensive player. So I don't know. For those two, I'd put Hyman on the top line and bring in Holloway as more of an injection of youth and speed. So, but we'll see what they do.
Yeah, I like that. I like that moving Hyman up and playing him with McDavid and Draisaitl, because that really seemed to work for them this season, and quite a bit. And they would go to that lineup a little bit in the first couple rounds, and it really seemed to spark that life when they needed it. I think that's going to give you the most offensive opportunity for the Oilers, and that's going to give them, you know, the best chance to have that firepower, especially if they can get that line out on a good matchup, you know, with that last change at home. In terms of moving someone up, you know, I think Pulivaari is going to have to move up to that second line, you know, with Nugent Hopkins. And then, you know, maybe Cassian gets a little bit of a bump up just because you need some more grit up in your top six. But that's kind of a tough one, because I think you're absolutely right. You know, Josh Archibald didn't really look like he earned any type of advancement in the lineup. And in fact, he was scratched for game three. And I think part of that was, you know, at least to me, in my eyes, he didn't block any shots when he should have sold out in game two, in that little 15 second turnaround where they scored two goals. So, you know, I don't think he's really there up for a promotion in the lineup. So that's another tough one to look at. And then I also think, you know, someone like Devin Shore or Derek Brassard, you might be able to bring in on your bottom six, but they're really not going to bring that much of offensive firepower that Kane can bring. So I think you're right. Maybe you look at the Holloway or maybe even a Carter Savoy or someone that's, you know, really young, but can bring some energy and can get placed in that second line or third line, maybe even a hybrid combo. If you run, you know, McDavid out every other shift, which it seems like they were doing in game three anyway, but bring in one of those young guys that just wants to prove himself and wants to bring that energy every shift, because that's what they need. No matter who they put in, the Edmonton Oilers need energy. And if they don't have any energy in game four, Colorado is just way too strong, way too fast. And they're on a mission this year. So if Edmonton doesn't come out with any energy, then it doesn't matter who they put in there.
No, and I agree with that for sure. Because the thing is, and that's how the Avalanche have kind of beat them, is that they've looked just, like I said before, it doesn't look like they're faster, maybe. And both teams are pretty quick.
Yeah. But it was pretty fast back and forth. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it, actually.
So, I mean, it's a structured speed. I mean, they haven't, and I mean, the goaltending has been better on that side too, even though they have their second string guy in. Yeah. Mike Smith has allowed some questionable goals throughout this series. And, you know, that kind of deflates your team, especially when you get the lead right away. And then while that Kane hit from behind and 5-minute major really screwed up their momentum too, because now you have to kill a 5-minute power play. And yeah, they killed it, but you know, you kind of mess up that, because now McDavid's not on the ice for 5 minutes or close to 5 minutes. And he did kill some of that 5-minute power play, but you know, he's not in the rhythm. He's defending. So, I mean, you really messed that up. If they would have, I really believe this, if they would have been able to have no penalty right after that, I think they would have won that game, because the momentum from that goal should have kind of propelled them throughout the game. So, but you never know. We're never going to find out, because that killed it all. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. And it's part of the, and we've talked about this numerous times the last couple of weeks. It's part of the beauty of the playoffs is, you know, any little moment within the game can change the whole course of the game. And then, you know, here we are on Monday morning speculating if that was the right decision or not, and what would have happened. But, you know, it's the beauty of hockey. You go out, you play the game, you never know what's going to happen. And sometimes bounces go your way and sometimes they don't. And you just got to put it behind you and get ready to play the next game. So last topic before we move forward, at least on Western Conference, I should say, do the Edmonton Oilers go back to Mike Smith in game four?
Oh, I've asked this question on the post game show every time. And Jim keeps saying, you keep putting him in, you keep letting him have the chance. I think you do it again.
But how many chances do you give him?
I don't know how many more chances. The thing is, like, I don't know. Because, like, I mean, you damn if you do, you damn if you don't. Yeah. You put in Koskinen and he sucks. And they're like, they shouldn't put Mike Smith. Let him deal with it. They've put Mike Smith in and he doesn't play well. Then you're like, I should have put Koskinen in. Probably would have helped. It's the same argument that was way back in the Boston Canucks series when Luongo was horrible against Boston in Boston.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, put Corey Schneider in. He's in Boston. He's from his hometown. He'll win. And they put in Luongo and we all know how that happened. How that went. Horrible. But if they would have put in Schneider and he was horrible, like, they should have put Luongo in. So, I mean, it's like, you're
you're absolutely right. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. And, it's one of those, like, we can speculate it here, as much as we want, right? Because we have this beautiful thing of hindsight, whereas you don't have that going into the playoffs, and it's certainly not heading into a game when your season's hanging on the line, because, you know, no matter what, it's it's either going to go extremely well or extremely poorly. So you just got to kind of pick your guy and go with it. And I think you're right. I think Edmonton sticks with Mike Smith. I thought maybe game three would have been the one that they sat him and said, okay, you know, we need to see what's going on here with Koskinen, but it looks like Mike Smith's going to be their guy, do or die. And so we'll see tonight if that pays off for them or not.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You just got to go with your number. I mean, the thing is they've really kind of named that Mike Smith's the number one, and you always, and that's what's with Luongo too. It's like, no, you go with your number one because you don't want to get, you know, to say, well, putting the backup and you're saying, well, we have no confidence in our starter now.
Yeah.
But again, in my mind, and this is, I said this back then too, it's like you go with the guy that gives you a better chance to win.
Yeah.
Does Smith give you the better chance to win at this point? I don't know if he would.
I mean, honestly, at this point, I think it might be a coin toss.
It might be a coin toss. I don't know how Koskinen is going to do. He hasn't really proven his worth and confidence, you know, that he should, that they should be confident in him either. I mean, he hasn't been that good in the playoffs. He hasn't really had much in the playoffs.
That's true. And when he has come in, it's when the other team has already scored like 6 goals and are ready to score 10.
So I don't know. And like I said back then too, you know, everyone was saying, oh no, you give the goaltender the best chance to give you to win. And at that point, I thought it was Corey Schneider, because the thing is, Luongo was horrible in Boston. What do you think, he's going to be good in Boston now?
Yeah.
And look, he wasn't. So, I mean, and I don't think Luongo would have cared if Schneider won the game and won the cup in Boston over him. He said, I've got a cup. I don't really care.
Right.
At least to me, I don't know. I'm not in his head. Like, he may care. I mean, you say, well, I'm not the starter. I didn't really win the cup. I don't know. I in my mind, I'd be like, well, I'm getting a ring. I raised the cup over my head.
Yep.
I don't care if I was in goal.
Like, the cup, I got a ring, and he played goalie for most of the series playoffs, to get them there. So, hey, you know, sometimes you just hit that, you know, bad streak of luck and things aren't going your way. And, you know, you got to be, you know, big enough to say, like, I don't have it. This guy does. And he gives our team a better chance to win. So, I think in terms of that, you know, most hockey players would say, as big of competitors as they are, they would say, hey, if our team has a better chance of winning with him in net, he should be in net. But again, you never know. So,
I guess you got to go with the guy that brought you there, and Smith did. So, that's probably their thinking, and it's not necessarily the wrong choice. And, what's different about this situation is that Koskinen has not really shown a very good, you know, to have some confidence in him. While Schneider, he was playing so well during the regular season. They basically were 1A, 1B throughout the regular season. So why not do that in the playoffs? That was my argument back then. I still stick to it.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. And certainly you'll probably have a good chance to ask Jim tonight on your postgame show if that was a good idea to stick with Mike Smith tonight or not. So
we'll find out.
Hopefully he'll have a much better answer for you than the last 3 games, right? All right. Moving on to our last topic of the week, or of today's show, before we get into our articles of the day. The 2022 NHL Draft Combine was this past week and wrapped up over the weekend, as the players eligible for the 2022 NHL draft took place on Friday and Saturday in a lot of fitness tests. We had a couple of our own hockey writers contributors there this weekend. We got to witness this in person in Buffalo for the first time in 3 seasons. Mark Sheeg has a really good article out that you can go check. It gives all the updates for the competitors, or I guess not really the competitors, but the draft eligible prospects and all of their times throughout the combine. And then Matt and his crew over at Prospects Corner hosted a great show yesterday that just kind of touched on everything with Peter Barrichini, who is at the draft combine. So I got to get your thoughts. And certainly if you're listening to this and you haven't already, head over to our YouTube page and check out that Prospects Corner. But Matt, I want to get your thoughts. on the combines this last week. Who impressed you? Who disappointed? And what were your overall takeaways?
Well, I wouldn't get the privilege to be there. I mean, because I'm on the West Coast and it was in Buffalo. So, I mean, I would have had to hop on a plane and grab my passport in like record time because I don't have one. But I kind of watched from afar through Peter's great coverage, Peter and Mark's great coverage over there. They were on Twitter all day, tweeting out video and, comments and stuff like that on the different players. So, like I said on the show, kudos to both those guys. And Andrew was there too. And I'm sure he was tweeting about it too. I didn't see any of his tweets, but he probably was doing it as well. But, Peter did a great job covering in Mark as well. I mean, Peter was his first time doing it. Mark and Andrew have been there. They're veterans at that event. They've been there, I think, almost every year the Hockey Writers were there. So hasn't been for 2 years, but thanks to them for bringing out all that coverage, because that's how I kind of got all my impressions of it. So for me, a lot of the players that kind of stood out from the fitness testing that I saw, the clips and the different results that were thrown out there, Rutger McGroarty was one guy that really stood out to me. Not just because Peter kind of hypes him up now. He's hyping him up as a Maple Leafs guy now. And I'm like,
so is Alex Thompson.
Canucks draft before you guys, I don't know if the Canucks, if they're on their radar at all, but he really stood out to me, and he stood out to me before this scouting combine, because I did his prospect profile. So if you want to check that out on the Hockey Writers, I also wrote that. He's just an impressive kid. He's a bigger guy. He's been listed as a center on Elite Prospects, but on the NHL Central Scouting, it says he's a right winger. So I'm not sure what position he actually plays. He probably plays both, which really actually adds to his allure because one of the harder working guys. He's skilled, he's creative, great two-way forward. He's just really well-rounded for a player. I mean, his skating, there's been talk about his skating as a bit of a weakness, but Bo Horvat had his skating a weakness from where he was drafted to, and he's one of the better skaters now in the NHL. So, I mean, I wouldn't say he's a burner by any means, but he can get up there. He's got some good speed, and that was not described of him when he was drafted. They said he's probably gonna be a third fourth line center in the NHL. His ceiling is a third line center because of his skating. But look what he is now. I mean, he's a 30 goal scorer. He scored 20 goals in his last 5-6 years. One of the best two-way centers in the NHL, face-offs, you name it, leadership. And McGroarty has similar attributes. And like I say, McGroarty's probably gonna be a better scorer and a physical player than Horvat has turned out to be, but he's got those similar things. And, if a team wants that type of player, and this is the thing, a lot of teams need this type of player in their lineup. And I'm pretty sure he kind of compared himself to Matthew Tkachuk, which, wow, that's a pretty good comparison, because also he has a similar, game to him. So, I mean, any team is going to get him. And I have him in my top 15 in my latest rankings. I'm going to release a new one coming out, spoiler, but he's probably going to be closer to that top 10 in the next one. So, and the thing is, and the Maple Leafs draft way down in 25th overall. I don't think he's dropping that far, guys. So, I mean, I'm sorry, Alex, sorry, Peter, because you're not going to be able to draft him. But on the other hand, we've seen stuff happen where guys drop and, I think he's going to be drafted around where Horvat was, and Horvat was drafted 9th overall.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens, and that means if he's drafted that high, the Canucks don't have a chance at him either.
Right. So, so it's all for nothing anyway.
All for nothing. Another team's probably going to end up getting him. But, the big thing coming out of the scouting combine was that he's a Maple Leafs fan, and that's huge. And that's, and all of a sudden, a lot of people don't like him now. And I'm like, come on. Like, because he's a Maple Leafs fan, or he is a Maple Leafs fan, doesn't mean he's you know, he's a bad player now, but everyone has their allegiances. Well, but
I mean, the poor kid grew up in Nebraska until he was 10 years old before moving to Michigan, you know, to get more of the hockey experience.
Yeah,
because there's not a whole lot in Nebraska. So, you know, let him like whoever he likes. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was funny. I was watching the Maple Leafs Lounge and Alex was hosting so Peter could talk about the combine. And yeah, Alex was all over Rucker and you know, just every other sentence was, I hope he drops to the Maple Leafs. Hope he drops to the Maple Leafs. And I love Alex's enthusiasm, but I think you're absolutely right. I think he was one of those guys whose stock absolutely soared this week at the combine. And I think you're right. I don't see him going any lower than, you know, probably that 15 to 18 range at the very least. But it'll be interesting to see. And to go with your point as that dual threat center winger, you know, that's what Marco Kasper is listed as. And when the grind line for our Detroit Red Wings coverage did our mock draft at number 8, I had Detroit taking Kasper there. So it'll be really interesting to see. And I think if you can put a dual position next to anyone's name, it immediately gives them a boost as well.
Yeah. And the thing is that's the one thing with Grody, he's got size too. And he's got a lot of that. When I did his profile, I'm like, man, this guy really sounds like Bo Horvat. But again, McGrory said, and I at first I'm like, oh, maybe he's more creative. But Horvat's shown some creativity too. Like,
yeah,
he's always wanted to do those little moves, one-on-one moves, on guys. You know, he's known to do that. But I think McGrory, the biggest thing about him, he's got a better shot.
Yeah,
like his shot is lethal. So I mean, comparatively to Horvat's, I mean, it's Horvat's got a good shot, but you wouldn't describe it as being a lethal shot.
Right.
So, you know, McGrory is going to be a pretty big find for anyone in that range. And I mean, I wouldn't be 100% surprised if he drops into the 20s. I just don't see it now after the scouting combine. I don't see it. Like,
you're right. I would have put him right around 20 probably to begin. And then now after this combine and after, you know, in the interviews, they don't hold a whole lot of weight, but they do a little bit in terms of character and maturity and what the teams are looking for. So I think his answers were very, very well put together. And I think teams are going to take that into account. And I think you're absolutely right. I think he's going to climb up the ladder. And to go with your point about, you know, like a Horvat type player who gets kind of burned on his skating a little bit. The good thing about the NHL and hockey is you can always work on your skating.
Yeah.
And there's so many skating coaches and resources available for players, you know, especially at that level, to continue working on that. And that's a skill that can be built and fine tuned. So it's not something like, you know, speed. Yeah, you can get a little bit faster, but if you don't have speed, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of speed.
Well, the thing is, Horvat, that's what happened. Like, he went to and worked really hard with the skating coach, you know, got his skating. And like, I want to preface this though, because the thing is everyone kind of points to this and I've done it. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. Whenever I say, it's like, well, Horvat did this, you know, he can improve that. Maybe Horvat also, the thing is, you got to look at it. Was it that the skating's horrible, or was it just a little tweak that he needed?
Right.
Like, he had good skating, but maybe a little bit of his mechanics were off.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe this, you know, you take a different type of stride here. I don't say that I'm an expert on skating. So just, I'll preface that too.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it could be something as simple as just not getting the right knee bend. Maybe straight up and down, or maybe, you know, not finishing his stride. He's not getting his feet all the way back under him. He's more of just keeping his hips too wide. I mean, there's so many little things that it could be, or maybe it was just, you know, maybe it was something as silly as he was wearing a pair of skates that were half a size too big. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, like,
cause I've said that about I'm Brock Besser. Like, everyone's oh, Besser, work on his skating. He'll just work on, get Bo Horvat's a skating coach in there. He'll become as fast as him. And I'm like, and he hasn't, he's worked on his skating. He has not become, his skating is still a weakness. Cause I still feel Besser would be such a much better player or much better scorer if he had a little extra step. Because there's times where he gets on two-on-ones and guys catch up to him so quick because he's just not that good of a skater. For speed wise, I mean, he's an okay, he's good enough to be in the NHL, but for speed, like, he needs that one extra step. And then that's a lot. You say that a lot about a lot of players. Like, if they had this one extra step and they could get a better scoring chance, if they would just be able to accelerate at one point, while, like, and no one's ever going to be McDavid speed, but that's why McDavid's so impressive, because of his skating. Cause he can get into positions where how did he get there? Like, it's like
McKinnon as well. Their ability to separate from the defense is amazing. Whether it's an extra burst of speed or an extra quick step to get just to create that separation to give themselves a scoring chance. Absolutely is something that I don't know if you can teach that, but it does come with, you know, working on that speed and working on that skating and being not just working on it, but being absolutely, just hounding yourself on it and being, you know, into it every single day and back and forth with that. So
you can't create good skating. I mean, correct. You have to have something there in the first place. Right. Like I can't just go to a skating coach and become an amazing skater. I went to a skating coach. I'll be amazing. No, you have to have some talent there at first. So Rip McGarty doesn't helps. Like, he's not a horrible skater.
Yeah.
But he does have some things to work on. And if he can, you know, that even if he just adds that little bit better, I think he's just going to be amazing. So he's one of my favorites, and I'm sure he's a favorite of a lot of teams now. So we'll see what team actually gets him.
Excellent. Well, before we move on, last thought on the combine, was there anyone that disappointed you? And just going through the list of, you know, Mark's top performers and, you know, the top 25 that the NHL put out for each exercise or instance or test, I should say. One thing that kind of stood out to me, and there's probably not really much to look into it, but I want to get your thought. Shane Wright did not appear on very many of those top 15, top 25 lists. In fact, I think he was only on one or two. Is that a cause for concern? Did he have a bad combine, or is that just something that's natural?
I've said this before, and Peter said it before, and, you know, you can't really take a lot. I mean, yes, you do look at this combine and say, okay, we'll see where these guys are. But I don't think you go crazy and saying, oh, Shane Wright, what the heck is he doing? He should be like 10th overall now. Oh, he dropped four, you know, out of the first round. Get him out of here. And that's jumping totally off board. But, you know, I feel like it's not something you go crazy and, you know, say maybe a little bit of concern. It's like, wait, what happened? You know, why are you not in the top here? You're supposed to be the first overall pick. Maybe you ask him, you know, privately about that. You say, well, you know, what's happening? But it's not something you go and say, well, he's not a top prospect anymore. I mean, why the heck is this? And there's also guys that go crazy in the gym and stuff, trying to get themselves up to, you know, a high level for this combine because they want to impress scouts, right? Impress the NHL teams because they know they're not a high end pick. They want to kind of boost their stock. Well, Shane Wright, I mean, I don't want to say this is why, because that show kind of maybe points to character too, because you don't feel like you want to work hard for this. Why not? But in the back of your mind, you're probably thinking, oh, I'm a top prospect. I don't really need to go crazy for this combine. Mm-hmm. Like, I can just do my regular stuff. Whatever happens, I'm still going to be drafted high. I don't have to bust my ass doing this. I mean, there may be some of that. But, I mean, also, you have bad days. I mean, you have a bad day. You come into, I mean, we all have them. You know, we wake up in the morning, you're like, I'm not feeling it today. And you go and do a test, and you're like, oh, if I were to do tomorrow, it'd be fine, right? Yeah. So maybe some of that, I don't know. I wouldn't put too much stock into it.
Okay, that's a great point. You know, I certainly have those mornings more often than not recently, but it was just something I noticed going through. Like I said, I didn't see the combine. I wasn't there. I followed along through Mark and Peter and Andrew's tweets as well. And so, you know, and then of course, you know, combing through all the the stories about it over the weekend and listening to some podcasts and whatnot. And so I wasn't anything that I took away that people thought Shane Wright disappointed, but it was just something that stood out to me as I was going through all the times and results. Yeah. Was that his name did not pop up as much as you might expect from a number one overall pick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And, but you look back at some of these other high picks, like biggest one is Bennett. I mean, he could only do one pull up and everyone was like, what?
Yes. Yep.
What is happening?
I remember that. Like,
well, he's turned out to a pretty good NHL player. So
yeah, now you wouldn't even think about that. He's got some man strength now, but yeah. Holy cow. Was that pretty funny?
I think Middlestad couldn't even do one.
Yeah.
Back when he was drafted and he was a high pick too. So it's like,
and now you wouldn't even look at him and think that he couldn't do it. So you're absolutely right. All right. Well, we are starting to run out of time and we got to get to our favorite segment. So let's do our articles of the day. And I will start my article today. Is a little bit of a cheat because I helped write this, but it's actually was put out by Tony Wolak this morning. And it's our weekly Grindline column. And it is titled The Grindline Top Red Wings Avalanche Rivalry Moment. So Tony, Devin, Rob Klein and myself, as part of the THW Red Wings contributors, we put together our favorite top moments from the historic Detroit Red Wings Colorado Avalanche rivalry of the late 90s and early 2000s. And so the four of us all put our favorite moments out there, and they range from, you know, the very expected fight night at the Joe to a moment that did not involve the Colorado Avalanche, but did kind of lead to the beginning of that rivalry. So without spoiling that, without giving away any spoilers, go over to thehockeywriters.com to read that. And that is the Grindline Top Red Wings Avalanche Rivalry Moment by Tony Wolak. And Matt, over to you. What is your article of the day?
Well, I'm going to do one that I actually edited this morning. And this is by Zachary Weiner. I think it's Zachary Weiner. Kings have executed a nearly perfect rebuild. And he goes through the whole, this is a long article, a little bit of a read, but he goes through basically right from the beginning of when this rebuild started, when the Kings fired general manager Dean Lombardi, Rob Blake took over, and, you know, rest is history, really. A lot of the stuff that he did, drafting, you know, bringing in young guys on entry-level deals, trading for guys, trading picks for, and then transition from that to signing veterans, to trading for veterans. And he went through, and this is basically how a rebuild kind of goes. You do that. You get rid of the veterans for picks, and then you acquire guys to kind of fill the gaps. And that's basically what the Kings did. And he goes through basically a timeline of all this, from the dates that the stuff happened to the draft, where all this stuff. And it's really well written. It's really well thought out. Definitely check that out if you want to kind of have a little bit of a timeline of this rebuild of the Kings. This is a great way to do it. It's like I say, it's a little bit of a read. If you're, you know, if you're sitting down and you just want to quickly read something, it's not that, but, you know, you want to sit at lunch and kind of take a read and find out how this Kings team has rebuilt itself into a playoff contender. Cause they did make the playoffs, got kicked by the Oilers, but put up a heck of a fight. You know, they were close to actually eliminating the Oilers. They were up. They were up in game six. They were up 3-2 in that series. So, you know, I'm pretty sure, if I'm not wrong.
I believe you're right. I don't have that series in front of me. I already closed that tab, unfortunately. So I did not fact expect check. To go back to it. Yeah. I usually have a
buffer. If I'm wrong, just let us know. There's no comments on Spotify, but you can
Find us on Twitter. No, I think this is a great article by Zach, and you're absolutely right. This is how a rebuild is supposed to happen, and how it's laid out, you know, perfectly through each trade, each piece brought in, each piece sent out, what they got for those pieces, how they've built, how they've approached the free agency. And I mean, yeah, the Los Angeles Kings looked ahead of what they were supposed to be. You know, they were supposed to be still a year or two, maybe even three away with this young core. And then here they are, and they just competed all season and made the playoffs and almost advanced. And I think that just goes to show you that they have the foundation in place for a very, very successful few years ahead of them. So, you know, every team has to go through some of those little hiccups and adversity as they are, as they're learning the process of playing deep into the playoffs. And I think this year will be a big first step for the Los Angeles Kings. So, you know, hats off to them for what they've been able to put together out there. Rob Blake has done a fantastic job in that front office, and the Kings are going to start to be a competitive team again.
They got so much young talent, and it's still coming.
Yeah. And in the next couple of years, they're going to be getting rid of some of these veteran book eaters. You know, they'll be getting some of these bad contracts off the cap, and that will just open up more space to bring in younger free agents and even bolster their squad even more. So, that will be a very, very interesting team to keep an eye on. So, all right. Well, we have ran very long today, but it's been it was very, very packed information day today. So we had a lot to discuss. We have two conference finals and the scouting combine that happened over the weekend. So thank you for joining us today. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Listen to new episodes Monday to Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. From Kyle Knopp, Matthew Zator, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.